That is not an experience a machine can have.
Right.
This is what separates us from machines.
Yeah.
And a name that came up last night in your reading was Elon Musk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this man...
Elon Musk,
yeah. Right? Right. And this man, you know, he's talking about interplanetary, space travel. He's talking about the done deal that is the merger of the human and the machine in the age of artificial intelligence. And these notions are incredibly frightening to me to think about this.
Right.
And it was described in the book World Without Mind, not about Elon Musk, but about others who, in fact, work at Google, that the singularity is just a matter of time for the period of transhumanism, and that they come across as do fundamentalists about the apocalypse. And it's just stunning. You mentioning Elon Musk last night made me think the kind of experience that you just described with the eagle are the kinds of experiences that poets need to have and write about, and they need to get out there somehow, because these, you know, you hate to think that this kind of an experience is an endangered species itself, but I think it is.
It could be, and it could also be a species coming back. You know, one of the beautiful things about nature, you give it half a chance, it comes roaring back.
Right.
And I really believe that we are not just our bodies, but our cultures, our minds, the best things about us, you know, that we love, that we sing, that we laugh, all comes out of nature. It's not something humans created. We like to think we created love. I just do not believe that. Anybody who's ever had a pet, I don't care what kind of pet, but for me it's a dog, they are able to embody selfless love in a way that no human can match. And people often, I've had the experience myself, and others have talked or written about having lost a loved one, and for whatever reasons having a difficult time grieving that. And then they lose a pet, and they grieve for the pet and the lost loved one. There's something about that connection that is really subterranean. So you mentioned Elon Musk.
But I want to, before I go into that, this Mark Twain quote that I saw at the shelter the other day. If you pick up a starving dog and make him prosperous, he will not bite you. This is the principal difference between a dog and man.
Yeah, right. right. Yeah, you help somebody. I'm a house painter. If I help somebody along and teach them how to paint, there's a very good chance he'll be my competitor in a few years. Which is okay. I get that.
But back to Elon Musk.
Yeah, so someone was being a young kid, obviously a tech enthusiast, who was enthusing about Musk's plan to develop a human colony on Mars, and the interviewer asked him, well, what is the point of this? And he said, well, if you think of humankind as this kind of sacred thing that you want to protect and make sure lasts forever, then you create this place on Mars where humankind can be preserved forever. And that totally leaves out the context of humankind. Will humankind on Mars be the same humankind as it is here on planet Earth, without beautiful trees, without birds, without seasons, the patterns, the tides, the flow, the breathing in and out with the plants? I kind of do not want to imagine what that humankind might be like.
And the other thing you have to ask about this whole artificial intelligence thing is, why aren't these people who are well-meaning and want to create something that's going to improve the stock of every human being, why aren't they looking at ways to, you know, save the biosphere?
Right.
Why aren't they looking at ways to, you know, realize that that homelessness and hunger are all political problems? They're not problems of technology.
Yeah.
You can't tell them that.
Well, I think they get a certain rush out of technology. It's exciting to them.
Yeah.
We have this obsession with going forward. The more ancient way of seeing is circular.
Or a spiral.
Or a spiral, exactly. But now we have this relentless force going forward. I was on a Delta flight once, and I read the little in-flight magazine from the president or CEO of Delta. And the punchline at the end was, never stop climbing. And I thought, wow, just never stop, no matter what. So the oceans are dying. Keep climbing. You know, the polar bears are drowning at sea. Keep climbing. And this is this meme in our society that is so dug in and so hard to counter, because people feel a certain excitement in this climb, in this seeing the unseen and the unknown. And it's no simple matter to try to break through that.
Yeah. Well, I think what breaks through that is the shadow events that impact a person's life, usually sickness.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a poem called Waterland. And you open, and it's page 29, and you open this poem with a line that I'd like you to read. And maybe we could start from that and talk a bit about it.
Okay. Waterland. This is about living in the Pacific Northwest, where it rains
Who
a lot.
Would have guessed?
Who would have guessed? Waterland. In land of mothering rain, our roofs become skins of drums. Edgeless days blur in a western ocean's dreaming, while inland castles of mist slip in and out of the forested hills. If you go walking there, you'll enter a conversation in the language of water, unbroken in its clarity. And though the rain-freshened creek and the dripping mosses chime in your ears, the exchange is felt more than heard, a deep drinking in, a common slaking and anointment. There's no way to divine the mind of it. You just walk along, body vaguely stunned, your warm amniotic breath hanging as clouds behind you in their element. For you are in it too. You also drink of all beginning.
Well, there's so many things about that poem that I think are important. One thing is, if you've ever been to the Cedar River Watershed Environmental Learning Center in Rattlesnake Ridge, there's an exhibit of water coming out of spouts in a rhythmic way, landing on drums that create patterns that you just have to see.
Yeah, I would love to see that.
It's called Rain Drum Court. It's remarkable. And as soon as I read this poem, I was transported there because of the metaphor you use. And then the other thing is, in land of mothering rain. And I really, you know, of course I'm on this Cascadia thing where I'm interested in bioregionalism, what it means to be here, and to wanting to have for myself a deep connection to this place. Mm-hmm. And this notion of land of mothering rain to me strikes me as, I mean, you could write that about anywhere, but it really seems to resonate here. Tell us what you mean by mothering rain. You know, and I don't want you to explain the poem necessarily, but maybe there was something that allowed you to come up with that phrase that you remember, maybe not, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I was just walking along, you know, on a rainy day in the woods, and I think those are one of those things that just come out of you. I didn't intellectually consider that. I didn't struggle over that line and think, what should I call this? There is something nurturing about the rain here, and it's womb-like, because it's above you, it's coming down, but it's also, the soil is spongy, we have the bays and the ocean, so you're kind of always encased in this rain. Though a lot of people complain about it, I find it really nurturing and really restful. And, you know, they say water is life, the indigenous people do. So, you know, maybe something else was speaking in me that knew about the mothering rain more than my intellect did.
Yeah. Huh.